Hi, folks. Bob Main here with another episode of Today's Survival Show. Episode number 89, to be exact, where it's my goal to help you harness the power of choice to live life the way you want to live it, on your own terms, without anybody telling you what to do or how to do it. And thanks for tuning in. This is a practical show. I keep it rooted in common sense. No tinfoil hat, no conspiracy-type thinking. Just basic everyday living skills, how to thrive today so that we can survive tomorrow. So this podcast is going to be an interview. I haven't done an interview in a long time. And instead of hearing me talk all the time, first of all, I want to say thank you for listening to the show. The listener count keeps going up nicely, little by little. It's great. It's a gradual growth and a gradual growth in the membership of the forum. Thank you very much. I have put out the invitation several times to interview people from the forum that have different levels of expertise. Today I'm doing that. I'm interviewing a man that goes by the username Jack Pine Savage, and he's given me the permission to use his first name. His first name's Greg. He's a member of our forum, Jack Pine Savage, and he is a deputy sheriff in northern Minnesota. So we're going to talk about self-defense, unarmed and armed. Self-defense. He's got some very good insight from a legal perspective, and he's also got some good training in self-defense. So I'll be turning him on here in just about a minute so you can listen to the entire interview between he and I. I just want to go ahead and do a couple of announcements real quick. The website is todayssurvival.com, and the forum address is todayssurvival.com/forum. Or just click the forum link. Join our forum, folks. We got a lot of good like-minded people that want to talk to you about how to live a more successful life. And it's growing, and it's a good community, well-controlled, friendly folks. We keep it, good conversational learning type material. And also, don't forget about the SAC Club. The guy that I'm bringing on to do the interview is the leader right now. Jack Pine Savage is in the lead with 8 points. You can score a point by doing two things for the SAC Club. SAC is Survival Activists Club. Refer somebody to the forum or refer them to the podcast. Just tell them to send me an email. Tell them you're in a contest, you're trying to win something. Tell them to send me an email saying who they're referred by, and you'll score a point, or write one of the pinhead elected officials that represent us either in Washington or on your state and local and county level, mayor, dog catcher, I don't care, whoever you want to email. That's fine. Just tell people what you think of what's going on. Any kind of subject is okay. All opinions are welcome, folks. This is not a political show, and I welcome all opinions. It doesn't matter who you are, what you believe. We all are in this together to live a better life. So don't forget about the Survival Activist Club. Also, check out knivesandgear.com. Knivesandgear.com. One of our sponsors, Jeff, has recently redid his website. Sorry. And it was very, very good. Very well done website. And I'm real happy with the SOG Vulcan that I have purchased from him, as I've mentioned before. Also, don't forget Today's Survival Show's YouTube channel. That's youtube.com/user/todayssurvival. I'll put postings to all of this in the show notes. So that pretty much wraps up the announcements. Let me go ahead and bring on Jack Pine Savage. His name is Greg. He is a deputy sheriff and a very knowledgeable guy. I really enjoyed it. So here you go. Listen to the interview, and when we are done talking, I'll come back and share some comments and thoughts with you. Here you go. All right, folks, thanks for tuning in. As you know, I've been talking about interviewing members of our forum, and got another special guest today. Got Greg from our forum. He also goes by the username Jack Pine Savage. And one of the reasons I'm really excited about bringing him on today is he's a deputy sheriff in northern Minnesota, and he's been in law enforcement about 27 years. And if you notice, I've been talking about self-defense a lot. And being a deputy sheriff and being in law enforcement that long, I think Greg's got some good things to share with us. Are you there, Greg?
I'm here.
Good. Thanks for joining us. First of all, I appreciate you coming on the show and giving us some of your time. And thanks for your law enforcement career.
Well, thank you.
It's an honor. You know, folks have heard me say on the show before, I've never served in the military, never served in law enforcement. Kind of one of the big regrets I've had, but I salute anybody who's done it, especially someone like you who's done it for 27 years. That's fantastic.
Well, thank you. I guess it's an addiction like anything else. You're meant to do it.
Yeah, and you probably are meant to do it, and I guess I was not. So without beating that one up anymore, let's get started here with the subject matter. I want to ask you. You and I talked a little bit before we started this about unarmed self-defense. And, you know, there's a lot of folks in the survival community who talk a lot about guns, guns, guns. But I guess I'd like to start off this interview with you, Greg. Tell us, kind of give us an overview of what you think in terms of not carrying a weapon. How should people be prepared? How should they be prepared to protect themselves?
Well, starting, you're more likely than not to wind up in a physical confrontation than you are in a deadly force situation.
Yeah, that's true.
Can I ask you, Bob, how long have you been carrying a handgun?
About 5.5 years.
Have you ever had legal reason to pull it other than for training?
Not once, thank God.
In those 5.5 years, have you ever been in a situation where a physical confrontation was possible?
Not once, thank God.
Really? That's not the norm. Most people can say, well, yeah, I could have had an argument with my brother-in-law or whatever. He was drunk and stupid. And that's typically where it happens. You know,
yeah,
somebody pushes you or shoves you, or you're protecting somebody else.
You know what? I take that back. I am wrong. I am wrong. How could I forget this? Yeah, a few years ago, there was a situation with a family member, and the situation got a little out of control. And some of the folks on this show have heard me mention that a little bit. But, yeah, I take that back. There was one time, fortunately, it didn't happen, but I would say it could have been.
So you're one for two, and that's pretty typical. Most people will wind up with an argument that escalates that maybe they should have backed out of, but emotion, pride, pick your name, gets in the way, and they stay arguing when they probably should have walked away, and it escalates, and you know, somebody pushes you, whatever. People tend to overreact.
You know, but, I'm glad you brought that up. I'm glad you brought that up. If you don't mind, let me pinpoint a question to you on that then.
Sure.
Being a deputy sheriff, I'm sure you've probably answered some of these types of calls before. What do you think people should do to try to avoid a situation escalating out of control?
Well, there's an old saying that comes out of Japan or China. I'm not sure exactly where, but when you pick up your sword, put down your anger. When you pick up your anger, put down your sword. It means walk away. Words, if somebody says something, the damage is already done.
That's true.
And I think Mark McYoung, you mentioned it out of his column, and that's an excellent resource.
Yes.
No-nonsense self-defense. It's an excellent resource.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not going to reinvent the wheel. He's said a lot of it.
Yeah,
but,
and by the way, I urge everybody who's listening today to get on that website, No Nonsense Self Defense. I've only read about 7 or 8 pages of it, and I love it.
He's got a very good way of presenting material that differentiates between self defense and the fantasy land that is out there.
Mm-hmm.
As far as it goes for you, walk away. That's one of the things. I'm a defensive tactics instructor for my agency and a lot of the surrounding agencies being a rural area.
Okay.
It doesn't matter how you win, just that you win.
Ah, very good.
If I have to take some verbal abuse from somebody and they're willing to go with the other guy, so long as he goes, I don't care.
You would call that a win, wouldn't you?
It's a win. They'd call it, we both win. He wins because he gets to run his mouth and act tough in front of his friends and picks which cop he goes to jail with, but he still goes to jail.
Ooh, I like what you said. He gets to pick which cop he wants to go to jail with. That's good.
As dumb as it sounds, it happens all the time.
So you would classify a win, and you know what? I think I see where you're going with this. You'd classify a win as not getting into an altercation.
Absolutely.
Okay.
I know we're talking empty-handed or unarmed defense here, but mm-hmm. What's the first rule of a gunfight?
Have a gun.
No. The first rule is be someplace else when it happens.
Okay, you got me on that one. You got me. Can I borrow that one from you?
Absolutely. You know, if you avoid the problems, you know, if you know there's going to be, if you're going to a gin mill, a bar, or whatever, nightclub, and there's always fights there, I think I'd go somewhere else or leave before the fights tend to start.
You know, that's such a great point. Thanks for sharing that. You got me laughing and you got me pondering this at the same time. And since we're on that subject, all right, what would you recommend from a law enforcement perspective that somebody do if they cannot walk away? Let's say they can't get out of the situation. Maybe they're ganged up on, maybe they're surrounded, whatever.
Good question. Without being in the particular circumstance, I can't give you a particular answer.
Okay.
I can give you some generalities, but I really can't give you a particular without knowing the circumstances. There is no one-size-cookie-cutter-fits-all answer to this.
Yeah, I understand that. What would be some generalities? What would you advise somebody? Just some general things.
Calming things down. De-escalation.
Okay.
Swallow your pride. If that means that you're called a coward, fine. Call me a coward.
Mm-hmm.
Definition of survival is to walk away alive and intact.
No kidding. That's definitely the truth.
You know, as far as it goes, you know, trying to maintain a reactionary gap, which is the distance it takes for most people to attack you. I guess a good way to establish that or a good way to describe that is if you're looking somebody in the eye, if you can see their feet, the toes of their shoes with your peripheral vision, they can't kick or touch you without taking a step.
Oh, okay. That's good. That's a good rule.
Keep your hands above your waist.
Right.
And I'm not talking clenched fist. Just keep your hands above your waist. You're halfway to defense at that point.
Okay, I was going to ask you why you say that. So you're saying you're halfway to defense. You've got your hands in the ready position.
Yeah, they're up. They're open, you know, trying to calm things down.
Okay.
It looks very good. I don't know what it's like where you live. I'm in rural Minnesota where there's not cameras everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
I was just in the Twin Cities, and I was amazed that literally every place I went, there was cameras.
Yeah.
Some kind of security camera or system or something that is recording. I feel like I'm in George Orwell's 1984.
Yeah.
I mean, there's cameras everywhere.
Yeah.
If your hands come up and are balled into fists, you look like the aggressor. But if your hands are up and open and trying to calm things down, it looks really good on camera.
You know, Greg, I'm glad you brought that up. I live in the Dallas-Fort Worth metro area. And there are cameras everywhere, probably even more so than in the Twin Cities. It's ridiculous, and it is amazing. I think I read somewhere that the average American is, if you live in a large metro area, you're on camera 3,000 times a year.
That's amazing.
Yeah, and it's pretty true. You're photographed on camera somewhere. I think I got this right, about 3,000 times a year if you live in a big city. So, like you said, it does look good on camera if you keep your hands up.
The other way to look at self-defense is realize I'm on camera.
Mm-hmm.
Is what I'm doing going to look like I'm aggressing?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
We discussed earlier, I do train an Okinawan karate form, and one of the things that the master has stressed is that open hand is defense. If you close your fist, you're attacking. Mm-hmm. Now, I realize that's a pretty simplistic way to look at things, but if your hands are open, it's awful tough to think aggressively. It also forces you to calm down.
Well, that's true. You know, my son's martial arts instructor teaches the same thing. I could never figure out why he taught that. Now I know why.
Clench your fist. Now try and pick up a pen. You have to relax that hand to do it. Hand is open, if you're consciously keeping your hand open, you're consciously calming yourself down. Psychologically, your hand's open. You're not tense. It calms you down.
Yeah, it calms you down. And, you know, Mark McYoung says on his website, No Nonsense Self-Defense, you know, he says, you need to think about this, and I covered this in one of my podcasts. Is the event that's happening to you something that you could take a picture of?
Absolutely.
You know, and or is it just them, is it verbal and it can't be photographed, or are they actually, you know, trying to beat the tar out of you and it's on camera?
Hey, there's nothing wrong with you know, with striking somebody if it's truly in self-defense. Mm-hmm. Absolutely nothing. I've shown up on scenes and had, you know, no question asked. This was legitimate, and it was self-defense.
Okay.
However, typically what starts out as self-defense, what's claimed as self-defense is, I hit him back.
Right.
Or he hit me back, and then I used self-defense.
He retaliated.
Yeah, because you started the assault,
mm-hmm.
either by pushing him, hitting him, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Now, is there a legitimate time to push somebody out of the way to get to the door? Absolutely.
To get to the door, to run, yes.
Absolutely.
Yes. That brought up a thought, and it's a question I want to ask you.
Sure.
Since you're a deputy sheriff, let's talk a little bit about the legalities here. When do you usually have to haul somebody off to jail?
When they need to go. Oh,
yeah.
What
determines that?
Well, severity of the crime that occurs, where it occurs, whether or not there's going to be, if there's going to be continuing ongoing criminal behavior, mm-hmm. Your past history with the person.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there are some particular crimes that, for example, domestic violence. If
right.
there is a demonstrable bodily injury, the perpetrator has to go to jail. I have no choice. That's been taken away from me.
Okay.
You know, typically it's protect society, protect others, or even to protect themselves in the case of like a drunk driver.
Right.
They don't look at it that way. They look at they've been caught, but the reality is if I let this person go and try and drive home, they're going to kill themselves or somebody else.
Right. They can cause physical harm to somebody.
So that's you know, and you get younger officers, they look for excuses to haul people to jail. It's the hammer mentality, I call it. If you give somebody a hammer and that's their only tool, they
yeah.
tend to look at problems as nails.
Good one.
The same thing happens when people carry a gun. They tend to look at all situations as, I can pull my gun, when reality is you can't or shouldn't.
Well, you know what? I'm glad you brought that up, because as you know, anybody who's been listening to this show for any length of time knows that I'm a big fan of concealed carry. But tell me from a law enforcement perspective, what is it that in your mind, or what do you know, or what have you been trained as to when you can and cannot pull it? I know that every situation is different, but what's some of the generalities?
Well, again, law enforcement use of deadly force and perceptions are different than the general citizen's use of force. Excuse me. I've walked up to cars with my gun tucked into my butt cheek out of my holster, and the people were never aware of it because something didn't feel right.
Mm-hmm.
And again, that's something else that people tend to ignore. If something doesn't feel right, it's not. Don't second-guess yourself. Get out of there.
Okay. All right, so that's what you're talking about.
But part of that is, as a law enforcement officer, I have an affirmative duty to look for trouble.
Right. That's what you're...
To apprehend people.
Yeah.
So it's a different perspective. As an armed citizen, you don't have that affirmative duty.
It's true.
You know, if there's a bank robbery going on, you don't have an affirmative duty to go apprehend that person. I do.
Okay, what if you're not on the scene?
You may have a right to do so.
Okay.
But you have no duty to do so.
Ah, that's good. Let's distinguish the difference between those two.
You know, you have a right to use deadly force, and again, every state's going to vary, but you have a right to use deadly force to protect yourself or another from the imminent threat of death, or in Minnesota, it's great bodily harm, grievous bodily injury, you know, to pick your poison. And the way I use in teaching cops, the difference between great bodily harm and death in that situation is, if I shoot you and you get to the hospital and survive, that's great bodily harm. If I shoot you and you don't make it, you're dead. So
it's
as a practical matter, you have to be in reasonable fear of dying or somebody else dying if you don't take action.
Okay. So there's pretty much – that's a good definition of it right there. Very well put.
And I know Masadayu gets into all the long-winded, this is grievous bodily injury and all that. As a practical matter, if it's deadly force, it's deadly force. If somebody's threatening you with a knife, a gun, a bazooka, a flamethrower, that's deadly force.
Okay. Yeah, it is.
You know, you're legally justified in using it in return to protect yourself or to protect somebody else.
Right. See, I'm glad you brought this up. I'm glad
you have no legal obligation to do so.
Okay, so you don't have a legal obligation, but you do have a right, and I'm glad you brought that up, because I think some people think that they have a legal obligation, and that's just simply not the case.
No. And, in fact, a lot of times it just gets worse. If I'm not working, if I'm off duty in a convenience store and somebody comes in to rob it, I'm going to make a great witness. I'm armed, but I'm going to make a great witness.
Right.
Unless that person starts shooting.
Right.
Or threatening to shoot somebody.
Then you're no longer a witness. Now you're trying
Now I have no choice but to act.
Yeah.
But most cops are the same way. If they're not working, you've still got authority, but I make a much better witness because I can give you a description, license plate numbers, all that people who aren't exposed to that kind of stress all the time don't think of.
Yeah, you're right. You're around that every day. The average ordinary person is probably not going to think of that.
Well, and that's okay. I wish I could be obsolete, but I don't think I ever will be.
I don't think you ever will be either. I got another question that popped into my mind. Let's switch gears from being armed to being unarmed for a minute.
Okay.
Let's say two people, neither one of them are armed, but what signs should a person look for in another person that would tip them off that this person's about to get violent or about to do something?
Well, you're going to pick up, language they're using.
Okay.
Whether or not it's, and people talk, unfortunately, they talk smack whether they're angry or not. But you can usually tell in voice inflection on what their intent is. You know,
right.
Angry words versus stupid talk.
Mm-hmm. Based on their inflection?
Yes, and the volume and just sometimes the words they're using.
Okay.
Body language, most people will start to try and blade themselves. If they start blading themselves to you or stepping back with their strong foot, you know, getting their hands up into a ready position,
right,
they're looking to attack.
Is that what you define as blading?
Blading or stepping back into like a boxing stance or a weaver stance.
Okay.
If that makes sense.
Yes, it does.
So they're getting ready to fight. They will clench their fists. They will clench their jaws.
Okay.
They will stare through you or start looking at where they're going to hit the target. They'll start targeting you, for lack of a better term. They're looking at where they want to hit. Or where they're going to, I mean, if they're a ground fighter, they're looking at your legs to see how they can take you down.
Okay.
Watching where they're looking, not looking in their eyes, but watching where they're looking is huge.
Following their head movements, you mean, right?
Absolutely.
Following their eye movements?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Person that all of a sudden stops moving, they're getting ready, they're winding the spring up, for lack of a better term, and they're about to explode.
Okay. When they stop moving?
Absolutely still, just for a second before they attack. We see that a lot.
Now, that's something I didn't know. Say that again. So, in other words, if it's two people...
You're seeing the body language, and all of a sudden, they stop. It's like they're assessing, and they're waiting for that split second to go.
Yeah, they're waiting for the opening that they think is going to be, you know, how they can get you.
Yes, and somebody that's attacking you is not being nice about it. They're not going to tell you, "I'm going to punch you with this hand."
Right. Yeah, they're not going to telegraph it either, are they?
Not intentionally. You know, you're going to see furtive movements if they've got some kind of a weapon, be it a knife, a club, whatever. You'll see them making slow movements toward that or movements toward that.
Mm-hmm. Those are good points. You know, body language, I mean, it's like any other type of communication. Body language speaks a whole lot louder than words do most of the time.
You know, and I can tell you all this, but people will pick that up on their own. They will start feeling uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm.
If you start feeling uncomfortable, take a step back. Create some distance. Don't corner that animal, for lack of a better term.
Right. Good point. Now, you know, people have heard me bring up a lot the 3-3-3 rule, which is an old rule. That's been taught for years. Why don't you expand on your thoughts on the 3-3-3 rule?
Well, again, statistics are the average gunfight is, you know, within 3 yards, fire 3 rounds, and in 3 seconds. 3 yards is not that far a distance.
9 feet.
That is
not very far.
No, you know, 2 steps and you're wrestling with somebody.
Exactly.
And very, very often that happens. What starts out to be, you know, maybe a gunfight winds up in a wrestling match, a fist fight, because there's a gun involved. Either you're going after theirs or they're going after yours.
Right. You know, there's so many stories about, you know, people that were trying to defend themselves, and all of a sudden their firearm got wrestled away from them.
Mm-hmm.
By somebody that knows what they're doing. Somebody can overpower that person and get it away from them.
Well, and most people are decent people. They don't want to shoot somebody.
No, I don't.
They will I don't either.
Yeah.
You know, they will display it as a threat before they actually use it, where a sociopathic criminal, it's going bang.
Now, how do you feel about displaying it and not using it?
I don't have a problem with that if it works.
Mm-hmm.
If you're legally justified in, you know, if deadly force is there, you can articulate why you were to that level
Yeah.
Excuse me. Then I don't have a problem with that.
You know, and I've heard and I've read so many stories, Greg, about people that never really had to pull the trigger. All they had to do was display it, and the conflict was over.
Absolutely. If you have to do that, though, as soon as it is safe, call 911. Let local law enforcement know what happened.
Right.
Because you know darn well the suspect is going to, and they're going to try and get you charged with assault with a deadly weapon.
Exactly. So it better that you get to law enforcement and explain your side of the case first, right?
Absolutely.
Good point.
Absolutely.
Good point. I'm glad you brought that up. I like your point that you brought up about watching somebody's body language. And what was the term again you use when somebody takes a step back?
Blading. You're turning your body away from it. Basically, you're taking your vital organs and moving them off the center line.
Yeah.
And it's a subconscious action that people do. Unfortunately, when you're the one that's surprised and threatened with that kind of imminent threat, your body is going to face the threat because you've got two arms, two eyes, two legs. You want them all in the fight. That's what your body's programmed to do.
Yeah, yeah. But somebody's blading is they're trying to move. They're kind of moving off the X.
They're setting you up.
Yeah, they're setting you up. Okay. I follow you. That's good. That's good. Another question I wanted to ask you about the legalities of it. I know that every state is different, but what's the process? What happens if, let's say, you really are trying to defend yourself and you don't get law enforcement involved, and all of a sudden now the perpetrator, as you mentioned just a couple minutes ago, tries to have you charged with assault with a deadly weapon? Do you think, you know, does that happen a lot? Do you see that a lot?
I've seen it enough that I know it happens.
Yeah.
I unfortunately wound up arresting a guy for domestic assault whose girlfriend had stuck him in the forehead with a steak knife. And I'm not 100% sure she didn't start the fight, but she wound up with a scratch and a mark, and he wound up with a knife stuck in his forehead. And it actually went around the skull. It didn't do any serious damage.
Wow.
But he wound up getting convicted.
You're kidding me. So nothing happened to her?
No, because she had a couple other gals there that were friends of hers that swore he hit her with a piece of wood trim.
Mm-hmm.
And that she'd kicked the door out, and it was a long story. It was a mess.
Yeah, I'm sure it was a mess. And, you know,
but the fact of the matter is, from what I know of these people, she was the aggressor, but I couldn't prove it.
Okay, so what do you think should have been done differently in that situation?
I think he should have called and got out of there.
Yeah.
Again, I don't know for – I won't speak for every cop, but we would much rather be called before it becomes a problem and help people get out of the situation than yeah. wait for it to escalate to a problem and then have to haul people to jail.
Oh, sure. I'll bet you probably 99.5% of the cops feel the same way.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah, nobody wants to do anything but try to prevent, and that's what survival and self-defense is all about, preventing as much as you can from happening. Good point. Hey, another question, and this would be interesting to get your perspective from a law enforcement perspective. I have heard people say that those who carry tend to be less likely to get into trouble because they are carrying. Do you agree or disagree with that?
Absolutely true.
Okay, good.
Absolutely true. They changed the law in Minnesota, I don't know, 10 years or so ago, where we went from a may issue to a shall issue. permit state.
Ah, good. I didn't know you were a shall issue. Okay, good.
We are now a shall issue, unless you're a prohibited class, you know, felon, domestic violence, that sort of thing. When that changed, it went from the local law enforcement chief, sheriff, whoever, of your jurisdiction issuing the permits to the sheriffs now issuing the permits in every county.
Okay.
At the time that transitioned, I was actually working on trying to get that changed. I was a small town chief, and I issued as many permits as the county did in that particular area. I never had a single person misuse their permit or get into a fight once they got one.
Wow. I am glad to hear you say that.
Including several people that I kind of shuddered and said, do I support the Second Amendment or do I play politics and deny them because I don't have to give it to them? And I said, no, I got to stand on principles, and I gave them the permit along with the spiel on this is what you can and can't do.
Right.
And copies of statutes. Not a problem. It was like you flipped a switch and they were all the most law-abiding person you could ever hope for.
Isn't that a man? I am so glad to hear you say that. Bravo. That is, you know, because I have been talking about that for quite a long time, and I'm glad to hear it out of a person's mouth like you say that. That's a cool story.
Well, it's the truth. Like, it's not a story. It's the truth.
Well, it's the truth, and you know the truth does make the best stories. I wish you guys could wake up your neighbors to the east, my home state of Wisconsin, and get them to pull their head out of their you-know-what about carrying.
Well, I do, too.
you know, I grew up in northern Wisconsin. You're in northern Minnesota. And I tell you what, it's weird. The politics of it is all weird. But anyway, I guess there's probably not much you or I could do about that.
Not without living in that state. And, well, it's a beautiful state. I don't really want to go live under that kind of regime.
It could be changing. I haven't been keeping up with a lot of it, but I think the governor's not running again or something.
No, that's what I've been hearing.
Yeah. So, well, this has been extremely valuable. Anything else you want to tell listeners about staying safe out there?
I shot you a private message on the forum and came up with some basic things, and kind of we haven't touched on any of that, but that's okay.
No, let's go back to that. Hang on. If you've got time, I got time.
Absolutely.
Let me pull that up. I'm glad you brought that up because there was some good information. So if you and the listeners will bear with my slow computer here, I am almost there. Okay, here we go. You talked about where the head goes, the body follows, and if you can move someone's head, their body will also go with it.
Absolutely. So if somebody's coming at you and you just push up on their chin and tip the head back, they will move backwards.
Yeah, they will.
And, you know, if they're coming at you and you just push the head backwards, that'll buy you enough time to run,
perhaps. It probably will. That's true. That's true. Point number two, you wrote, the weak point on any grab is your opponent's thumb or thumbs.
If somebody grabs you, if you grab something, then try and grab something without your thumb and pick up like a bottle or something without your thumb. It can be done, but it's a weak grip.
Yeah, you're right. In fact, I'm trying it right now. I got a glass of water here that I'm trying to pick up without my thumb, and it's pretty tough to do.
So all you do is you take the thumbnail or the bottom joint and pry it away from your hand or your arm, whatever they happen to grab. Mm-hmm. Again, it doesn't always work, but 80% of the time it will.
And that's pretty good odds.
You pry the thumb, you may break the thumb. And that may be serious bodily harm. But what was your intent in using the force? To get away. It wasn't to break the thumb.
Yeah, it was to get away.
You know,
it was to get away. I'd rather stay alive and deal with a person's broken thumb, to be honest with you.
Yeah, and you know, a broken thumb, okay, I'm going to pay their medical bills.
Right.
Okay, I can live with that.
You're alive.
I survived.
Your survival.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And another, when moving the head, you're attacking the eyes. If you attack somebody's eyes, their body's going to react. Now, I'm not saying stick your fingers in their eyes, but that's one of the reasons pepper spray works so well, mm-hmm. is you're spraying something into their face.
Mm-hmm. It causes them to react to that.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
If you doubt this, have your kids squirt you with a squirt gun. your eyes are going to close. You're going to blink.
Yes.
No, it's not a permanent reaction, but it's quick. It buys you time.
You know, even that 1 or 2 seconds that it buys you can make a world of difference.
Absolutely.
Yeah, things happen so fast. That's something else I'd like you to comment on. Is I think there's a lot of people who don't realize the speed with which a lot of this happens.
Have you noticed that? Yes, and you know. You go to like a martial arts class and you'll see people training, or like the Tai Chi guys on late night TV, where they're moving in almost exaggeratedly slow movements.
Mm-hmm.
They're working precision. When the adrenaline kicks in, mm-hmm. you can move so fast it will scare you.
Yeah, and it's probably a lot faster than you think you can move, and then that also holds true with regards to the other guy.
Absolutely. But the difference is when your threat, the attacker is not under that kind of stress. He's not under a direct assault type threat.
Mm-hmm.
So he doesn't get the adrenaline dump initially.
Right.
He's angry. He may be angry. He may be, you know, the aggressor. But he's not adrenalized.
Who is?
All of a sudden, the person being attacked gets an adrenaline dump once they perceive a threat. And I'll address that real quickly.
Sure,
that adrenaline
ahead.
Will burn through your system within about 20 seconds.
Wow.
You have got 20 seconds of as much power as you will ever have in your life. After that, your strength drops in half.
Really?
Yeah. And then you've got 60 to 90 per seconds of that, and then it drops to a third until you're absolutely, completely worn out.
So you're saying you'll be as strong or stronger than you've ever been for only about 20 seconds.
That's it. You've got to end this quickly and as fast as you possibly can.
Yeah. Yeah, because then you're going
to
crash.
Once you feel that adrenaline, it's time to move. Run, yeah. Get away, do what you got to do.
Right.
Because
you're going to be, because then you're going to get extremely weak and crash and burn after that.
Absolutely.
Very good point. I'm glad you brought that up. I love these interviews. I learned so much doing these.
Some areas that, you know, if somebody grabs you, if you feel underneath your own, you feel your neck down to where your ribs start.
Mm-hmm.
There's a notch there between your collarbones.
Right.
It's called the jugular notch. There's a nerve on the inside of it. If you just push your fingers in and down, it'll back somebody up. Now, again, it's a pain technique, but it'll back them up.
Where's that point again? Where is that?
If you find your Adam's apple and go straight down to where your collarbones come together,
yeah.
There's a notch there.
Uh-huh.
Push in and down.
Yeah.
And it's tough to do it to yourself.
Yeah.
But
to somebody else.
Police officers use it a lot to get somebody in a car or to sit them in a chair. Because it hurts.
Okay. That's the technique. Yeah, it hurts. It hurts and you're going to get very little resistance.
Well, and if somebody's grabbing you, that's shorter distance than them coming around your outside, you know, from the front. Again, you want to minimize the actual damage you're doing to them. So I'm going to tell you some areas to hit that I would teach cops.
Okay.
On the leg, there's a common peroneal or perineal, depending on how you want to pronounce it, nerve. It runs down the side of your leg, about where the seam on a pair of jeans are.
Okay.
If you stand up and just let your arm hang down about where the end of your fingertip is, or about mid-thigh, the area is about the size of the palm of your hand. You can hit it with a knee, a shin, a nightstick, an impact weapon, a flashlight.
Good. Okay.
So it doesn't take a lot of...
Above their knee?
Above their knee, about halfway between the knee and the hip.
Okay.
On the inside of the leg is what's called the femoral nerve. It kind of follows the inside. It actually starts at a point just above the knee, about the size of a nickel. Goes up toward the groin and actually widens as it gets higher.
Okay.
Until it's about 3.5 inches wide at the top, an area that you can strike. We teach cops to hit these with impact weapons.
Okay.
Or with a knee, or with a kick. So what's nice with these is if you hit one of them, especially on somebody who's not expecting it, you tend to get a sympathetic reaction and the other knee collapses as well.
Now that's interesting. That's interesting.
Again, if you watched Muay Thai, Thai boxing, that's where they're hitting with their knees. So you can toughen your legs up to get used to taking that hit.
Okay.
But I
if
tell you what, you ever been walking?
Yes.
Have you ever bumped the side of your leg with a suitcase or a briefcase and kind of felt your leg go funny?
Oh, yes, I have. I've done
That's the point you're hitting. Now, can you imagine driving, hitting that hard?
Ooh, okay, yeah, and somebody intentionally hitting you there hard.
Yes. Both knees collapse. They go to the ground. Are they going to stay there? No, but again, it bought you some time.
Yeah, it buys you time, and everything you're talking about is great because every little bit of time that you can buy, every half second, 1 second that you can buy, if these things are over in 3 seconds and you can get yourself an extra second or two, you've probably just won.
And it's less likely that you're going to need to shoot somebody.
Yeah, yeah, that's great, you know, because I really dislike it when people, you know, paint us that carry out to be maniacs because we're not.
When, you know, if you're carrying a gun, you should have either some kind of empty hand training or carry an intermediate weapon, a pepper spray, something else.
Yeah.
Part of that is legal for your own legal protection. There's a reason if you look at cops, they've got the Batman belt. Other than the fact that their tools usually work, if I have to shoot somebody, I don't want their plaintiff's attorney coming back saying, well, you don't carry anything but a gun. You must be a trained killer.
Exactly. You know, and I'm so glad you brought that up because I'm sure there's people listening to this that, okay, now they agree with you, and now they're wondering, where do I get some of this kind of training? What would you suggest?
I'm of the theory that anything is better than nothing.
Okay.
My kids have taken Taekwondo, and they've gotten black belt ratings in that. But that's a sport. It's a competitive Olympic sport.
Right.
When I was in junior high school, I trained judo. And again, it's a great art, but it's an Olympic sport.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't translate real well to street realities. What you need to do is find what's available in your area. And if it's Taekwondo or it's judo and that's what's available, anything's better than nothing.
Anything's better than nothing. Now, here in the Dallas area, there's a good Krav Maga school. What do you think about that?
I think it's overhyped. And
okay.
They've tried to sell that to cops, and it works as a sort of as an apprehension tool, but it was designed as a combat art, for lack of a better term,
yes, it was.
The battlefield.
Yes, it was.
And it's designed for soldiers who are trying to kill each other. It has trouble translating to the civilian world as less than lethal.
Okay, what do you think of mixed martial arts?
Depends on the school.
Yeah.
It strictly depends on the school. some of them are very good. Some of them are strictly focusing on you know, Ultimate Fighter competition.
Yeah.
A lot of them are heavy emphasis on ground fighting.
Yeah, what do you think of that?
I'm on the wrong side of 50 now. going to the ground is a bad thing.
It is a bad thing.
Okay. Having a little skill on how to get out of it and get up is a good thing. But taking somebody to the ground, you're not just fighting one. Criminals like cops tend to travel in packs.
Uh-huh. Yes, they do.
You know, you may not know that the other guy is his backup until everything starts going to heck in a handbasket.
Then all of a sudden he shows up.
Yeah, and now you're wrestling with this guy on the ground and you're getting boots to the back of the head.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's interesting you brought that up. You know, my son's in a mixed martial arts school, and I did my homework, and there were several of them here in the area, and I picked this one because, in fact, they do teach ground fighting, but this instructor is very adamant about trying to stop it from going to the ground.
And that makes a lot of sense, because going to the ground is a bad thing.
Yeah. But then he also teaches them what to do if it does end up there, because there's a great likelihood you guys are both going to be on the ground.
Absolutely. And, you know, having skills down there is great, but when three and four of his buddies show up, you're in a severe disadvantage.
Yeah, you are. You're in a plus it's going to be harder if you are carrying a firearm. It's going to be a lot harder.
Absolutely, because it's going to wind up getting either beat up, pinned underneath you, or
right.
A lot of times, fall out of your holster.
Exactly, and then if that happens, then you're in really serious trouble, because then your attacker's going to use it on you.
Yeah, because you know that one works.
Yeah. It better. Hopefully you've given it a 1,000-round trigger job, and you know how to use it at least. This is good. Greg, thank you very much. We're pretty much out of time, but this was fantastic. I really appreciate you sharing this with us.
Well, you're more than welcome.
Yeah, this was great.
I just hope it works for somebody, encourages somebody to go out and get some training.
Well, it will. You're encouraging me to go retrain, and I'll tell you what, I know I'm going to think about this, and I'm going to listen to this a few times, and it's going to make me think of some more stuff. Do you mind a part two at some time in the future?
Absolutely not.
Okay, good.
Absolutely not. I'll be more than happy to help.
Well, great. This, you know what, and thanks so much. And, you know, folks, I hope you've gotten as much out of this as I have. Thanks again for serving us in law enforcement, Greg. I appreciate that. My hat's off to you, and I salute you, okay?
Well, you're more than welcome. Thank you.
Well, thanks. Folks, this is Greg, also known as Jack Pine Savage, from our forum. And by the way, I met him over at the High Point Firearms Forum. And for those of you who are listening to the show, you might want to check that out. That's a very good website, too. It's High Point Firearms Forum. And I understood recently, Greg just told me, they're very welcoming to people who don't even own a High Point firearm, which is good. So thanks again for coming on the show, Greg.
You're more than welcome.
Take care. Have a great one.
Okay.
And
you too.
Look forward to hearing you in part two. Bye-bye.
All right. Bye.
I don't know about you folks, but I learned a great deal from that. Thank you, Greg. You notice how I set him up there for a part two. So I think we'll be doing that probably here maybe in the next couple of weeks or so. I'm going to take some time to think about what he said and think about how it relates to my life. I want you to do the same. He's also volunteered to answer some questions, obviously, on the forum since he's such an active member. So I'm going to make a special thread about this show. About this episode on the forum. If you want to either send him a private message and ask him some questions or put something publicly on the forum for all to see, that would be helpful. And you're more than welcome to do that. So thanks for listening to yet another episode, folks. And this is a community-based podcast. Again, if you have an area of expertise or you have some strong opinions about something or something you just want to talk about, go ahead and give me a call. Let's do an interview. Let's put it up there on the podcast. We'll make it educational. You know, if somebody brings away or walks away with just one pearl of wisdom from these shows, then I think that the goal has been achieved. Don't forget to support the show, folks. My name is Bob Main. You've just listened to another episode of today's Survival Show, where it's my goal to help you harness the power of choice, to live life the way you want, to defend yourself properly also. And remember some of the techniques of trying to avoid a conflict, which I thought was so excellent about this interview with Greg. Thanks, folks. Thanks for tuning in to another episode. I'll catch you next time. Bye-bye.